Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Podnuts Pro. This is show number 89. I am Marvin B., and I am joined by our resident genius, Matt Rainey. How are you doing, Matt?
Wow, that's a lot to live up to.
I was waiting to see what he was going to say.
The dramatic pause, I was getting excited. Is it me? I'm doing good. Thank you.
All right.
And you could have said myself, Marvin B.
You could have. That would be great.
I could have done that. And our head geek, Martin Obando. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I'm doing really good. Head geek, huh?
Well.
That means I make all the big money.
Yeah.
No, I took it a different way, but never mind.
Oh, hey, don't let that go to your head.
Well, I was going to say head geekster, but.
Ooh, play on words.
Yeah, play on words. All right. So it's been a few minutes. So how's everybody been doing?
I'm doing good. Rain's back here in the Pacific Northwest. Keeping busy. Nothing too crazy. Just enough to drive a person insane.
Just enough. I'm almost to that point. Not quite there.
I spent 2 hours on the phone with QuickBooks today, so that's enough to push me over the edge.
It's a nice quick call. That's why I call it QuickBooks.
Yeah. Why don't we start our story section of the night by telling us about the QuickBooks call?
Sure. So this was just a simple upgrade. Client running Premiere 2015 in multi-user mode, and they just need to upgrade to Enterprise 2017. So upgraded the server. The server is just running the QuickBooks Database Manager. That's all it is. That upgraded really easy. Upgraded the clients. That was fine. But then in Enterprise, there's a payroll section. So I talked to the tech. The tech walked me through everything. She was very nice and sweet. Opted to stay on the phone with me. Then they handed me over to payroll section, and that's when it took a dive. So they've never ran payroll before through QuickBooks, and so they were wanting to set everything up, and the lady who was doing payroll was also busy with another project. So I kept pulling away from another project to have her click on buttons that didn't exist yet because they hadn't run payroll. So finally I just said, can this be done later? And they said, oh yeah, can be done later. So it just, you know, it was one of those 2 hour calls where it just was time to get everything up and running and installed. And, you know, can we install this on this computer? Yeah, go ahead, do it. We installed it and it filled in all the keys and it proceeded without my acknowledgement. Come to find out the guy had already installed a demo of the 2017. So I had to back everything out, reinstall. It was just the normal stuff. So that was just, but it was just a long call on with QuickBooks. Without having any breakfast, so I was getting kind of frustrated by the end of the call. I would have to probably say that was probably the biggest part was.
Did you have a Snickers?
I should have had a Snickers because I was definitely becoming a diva.
Now the server that this is running on, is it doing DNS? Is it a true like server?
Yeah, it's the primary server.
You know you're gonna have an issue with that, right?
So far, so good.
There's a problem with DNS and the new QuickBooks servers.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, the ports conflict.
Oh, lovely.
So you're going to have it to where the multi-user just won't work if they use that. And what you're going to do is, stop DNS or stop QuickBooks Database Manager, stop DNS, start QuickBooks Database Server Manager, start DNS. Now, you can write a script, and I wrote a script, and I put it to run, not a log on, right? Because if you reboot the server, you're not necessarily logging on.
Right.
It's a script when the server starts up to do that. And some people said they put DNS to delay start, but you don't want to do that because your logins can take forever. So just let it start up normally and a log on startup script to stop DNS, stop database managed server, start database managed server, start DNS.
Okay. So could you serve me that script? No, I mean, I could write this script.
I can't. I'm sorry.
Come on. I bought your forms. Last show, live on the show.
Did you really? The forms come with the free script for QuickBooks DNS.
Okay, I'm going to go look for those up.
Oh my. There's going to be a rush to informedit.com.
Oh, wait. I don't think you get that script if you use the Podnuts 25% off code, though. So
I'll honor that.
It's okay. All right.
It doesn't come with it. You just got to read the show notes for it. So after you buy them, then you can go read the show notes for the script.
Show
but
note.
But not before.
Note, singular. Show note.
Show that right.
There's no notes.
Maybe that'll make the note.
All right. So.
But yeah, we've had problems with that all over the place. And in fact, for companies with more than one server, we just put Now we put QuickBooks on a server that's not running DNS.
Well, that makes sense, and that's what I'd like to do. Except they don't have one. So
right. So you'll need that script.
All right. And now is this just new with like 2016, 2017? Because yeah. They've been using 2015 with no problems.
Oh yeah, I've had clients use this forever, and then all of a sudden with this new version, it happens.
All right. Well, thank you. I've learned something now. I'm no longer the head geek. I pass it to you.
That's okay. You could have spent a quick call on the phone with QuickBooks to figure out why multi-user mode stops working.
Yeah, but I'd rather talk to you.
Well, I should have made it take 2 hours then. I made it too easy on you.
You stretch it out. let me research that. I'll put you on hold for just a minute.
Yeah, then go to lunch and then watch a quick show that I recorded.
Go to the movies.
Yeah, I'm waiting to hear back from the engineer.
Yeah, I'll get in touch with the programmers.
So yeah, that's a common issue anyway. If people upgrade to that, it's a problem.
Yeah. So you had a quick QuickBooks call. I had a customer that was out of town that was going to upgrade their internet. Now, we've all had the lovely calls, and I will mention that they were going to go from Bright House, and if anybody's going to correct me, yes, I know that Bright House was bought and is now called Spectrum, but they were going to go to AT&T, because surprise, surprise, AT&T was half the cost of Bright House. It's usually the other way around. But anyway, here's what it was. A Monday morning, they had an appointment window from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. I was going to just simply work with them remotely because I had a router on site, and all I was going to do was change this configuration for the second WAN port so that I would just configure it, they would plug it in, and then if it worked, we would unplug the first WAN port. So bottom line is we were going from Bright House static IPs to AT&T static IPs. Well, 10 o'clock came around. Customer called me to say that she hadn't heard from AT&T yet, just wanted to make sure that I would still be available after 11 o'clock. I said, sure, no problem. It's a Monday, so I'm going to be here all day. So 10:19, the tech shows, 10:19, the tech calls, apologizes. He's got to move the appointment window from 11 to 1. Typical, no big deal. 12:07, the first tech shows up. And the reason I say first tech is because before he even approached the customer, he went around the side and cut the phone line for Bright House.
So you going to rob the joint?
I don't know.
This was a bank, right?
Then he cuts the lights too, right?
So
maybe they're upgrading their light system.
So
they're getting static lights.
Even though he was capable of cutting the line, he couldn't run a new line. So they have to wait for a second tech to come and run a new line.
I only cut lines. I don't run lines. It's not my fault the guy who runs lines is late.
That's an ISP for you.
So at 3:19, they finish running the new line. But when I started to talk to the tech about setting up his modem in bridge mode, he didn't know what bridge mode was and said that they can't do bridge mode. Mind you, the customer took probably an hour talking to tech support before setting up the appointment to make sure they could do bridge mode so that we could use our router and keep all of our external services, mail services, remote access, all that stuff. AT&T said, yes, we will send out our most seasoned tech with a modem that will be able to go in bridge mode and you can keep everything the way you want. So this tech, who didn't know anything about bridge mode, turns out he was probably 20-ish. And so my customer's like, I don't know how he could have been the most seasoned tech.
He must have a lot of turnover.
So at 3:30, he finally has talked to his people. And yes, they can do bridge mode, but he's got to do a different modem, which he happens to have in his truck. So they'll call me back. 4:15, they could not get the modem working with the static IP addresses. So I said, just get it working in dynamic. I'll take care of the rest. No problem. I'll take care of it, sir. 5:14, couldn't get the modem working with the dynamic IP address. Had to go get another modem. 7:54 p.m., we finally got internet service. Partially. They did not get anywhere near the speeds they were supposed to get, and they got a dynamic IP address. We had to use their modem only. So we had one machine working on their modem because they couldn't plug in anymore.
So that might have been what they were going to do all along. They just made it take till 8 o'clock to make you happy with what you got at 8 o'clock.
Right.
We're going to slowly wear them down. Was this, by any chances, was this Intuit tech support?
So what you sign up for is high-speed internet for all your computers. What they really were going to give you and what you got is slow internet for one computer.
Right. So about 3 days later, she called back and said, we went back to Bright House. So everything's back the way it was. They just couldn't stand it.
So what did they do with the cut line then?
Oh, the tech ran a new line, remember? That was at 319, the tech.
Right, I was just imagining them pulling the original line and then just using those little wire nuts.
And splicing, on the older, splicing it back.
Splicing it back together.
So
yeah, and of course on the phone they tell you that it can do bridge mode. You could ask anything you want before they come out. They're going to say yes to everything. Of course they can. Of course they can. This is good service.
Yeah.
I've seen this router make waffles before.
So just had to share that. That's just, typical internet service provider story.
And it was from Bright House to AT&T?
Yep.
U-verse, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what the problem is. U-verse, yeah, that's not for businesses. They can't do anything. We've tried that many times, and they go out there, and they say they can, and they can't, and we just tell them, go away.
Yep.
We're going back to what we're... And now we tell clients, if it's U-verse, don't do it. Unless you're a small office, and you don't have any services, and you just need internet without a static IP, it's fine. But if you're a business running services, U-verse is not going to work.
Yeah. All right. So, Rainey, how about you? Any joyful news?
Yeah,
because we're in that season now.
Yeah. Let's see. I got one. This is a typical description of what a client says. They call us saying, we have one user. When he tries to scan to email to his address, it won't go through. And his is the only email address that won't go through. Now, of course, my first thought is, well, you typed the email address wrong in. That's the only reason why one would not go out, and every other address in the whole world, as you say, works, right? Okay. Had him check it. Doesn't work. Then he says, you know what? I can't send to my personal account either. Okay. So now we're going from you can only not send to one address and every other address works. Now you can't send to two addresses. Try and send to me. Try to send to me. Doesn't go through. I say, try and send to anyone. Oh, it works for her. What's her email address? And it's got whatever at, abc.com. I said, okay, it's a different company. It's not your, they're like xyz.com. He can send to abc.com. I said, okay, try and send to anyone who's not on abc.com. Nope, none of them. None go through. Try and send to anyone else at abc.com. They all go through. Okay, so you can send to one domain, and that's it. So I log in. What's the IP of this thing? I find the IP. It's a different subnet than his subnet. Okay, so what printers, it's a multifunction printer scanner. So what is this device? And why can this person at this company receive the emails? Then I get the missing piece. Oh, well, we're renting space from that company. Oh, so the email address you can send to, you're renting space from them. So you can send to them, but you can't send to anybody else. Okay, that makes sense. So then I find out that the IP is on their subnet. And there's a VPN. It's going across the VPN. So it's a different subnet because it's a point-to-point VPN, hardware VPN between routers. So it's going through the VPN to an exchange server on the other company's subnet. So they're using another company's subnet exchange server to send mail. That's why I can only go to that company, because that address exists on that exchange server and it's not relaying out. After all that, do a new receive connector. I don't know if you're familiar with receive connectors or not on exchange server.
I am.
So do a new receive connector that basically allows this private IP address of that multifunction device to send out through the exchange server. And the way I do it is I just do externally secured. That way you don't have to authenticate at all.
Right.
And then now it can send mail to everybody. But their initial thing is it only can scan to one address. Little bit mistaken right there.
Yep.
Yeah, they forgot to mention the VPN, that it's not actually their device. It's not actually their server. That's not important.
So here's a question. You got on the other company's exchange server?
Yeah, we have to do that work too. But I didn't know that company was sharing offices with that company. It's a it's out of state, the office. Their servers are in Louisiana, but this office was out of state, and I didn't know that they rented office from each other. I knew they knew each other, but I didn't know they rented office space from each other. When they told me that, it kind of made sense. So they were okay with it because the person who actually started the work order was from the other company, saying they can't send mail, they can't scan mail. We can't scan mail to him, basically.
So the real question is, do you get to bill both companies?
I should. Because would they really compare notes? I bill whoever submits the work order. In this case, it was the parent company. Or the company who they're renting space from. That's who got the bill.
You're going to bill the lessee, not the lessor.
The people who own the server. They're the ones who called.
Because it was a server issue.
Oh, the people who own the server.
Yeah.
Nice. Like, so I know you didn't call, but by the way, it was your problem, so I fixed it. Here you go.
Well, I know, actually, the parent company called, but they know each other. Sometimes, it's a weird relationship. But they said, we can't send mail to that person of that company. They said, call that guy. Well, why would I call that guy? Well, he's by the scanner. Well, how are you, if you're not by the scanner, how? But in the end, they were both by the scanner. They didn't tell me that. They said, well, call this guy. He's by the scanner. Well, you can't send mail to him, but I got to call him by the scanner? I'm not following. They weren't making sense until I have to pull teeth to get information.
Well, yeah, he's an office closer, so.
Yeah. I don't feel like walking in there.
So what was in the SMTP and stuff settings inside of the multifunction?
That was the private IP. That was on a different subnet.
Got it. So, I mean, so just for people who don't have... I mean, one of the as you were talking about this, I was thinking of different ways I would have shot this. Would have been that you could use that SendGrid to just put a free information in and see if it goes out.
I had problems with SendGrid. Was SendGrid down last week?
I don't know. I have not had any issues with them.
Oh my god! I went round and around with them last week because I couldn't get my account. The password reset thing wasn't working. The support site was down. Look, it was a week before they responded. Eventually, it worked. But after a week, all last week I spent trying to get it to my account. I mean, their support was down. Their site was down. That was a mess.
I didn't have any issues. I'm sorry.
And you're paying for the account,
right?
You
didn't have any issues.
It's all about me. It's good to be the head geek.
Oh, now you're taking the title back.
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes I give and take. I'm an equal opportunity.
Yeah, so the way I troubleshoot, we first find out what the SMTP server in the device was, and then I try and ping it. I can ping it, and I would expect I could because they said they can email some people. But then when I realize it's not on their subnet, then I got to figure out where it is.
I mean, I realize by going to SendGrid, that's kind of a huge, big, that's a massive change to just test to something small. But
but yeah, I mean, it ended up being relatively quick for that once I figured out where the device was.
I think that's what 80 to 90% of this is that you end up getting a client who calls in and says, this is the problem. And then you realize you spend the next most of your billable time is just figuring out what they really mean, you know, and then you spend the next 10% of it going, okay, 5% listening to what they have to say, 90% figuring out what they really mean, and then 5% fixing it, and then you're done.
Well, when I connected to this computer, you had two multifunction devices, a Canon and a Toshiba. I said, which one is it? I don't know. Well, when you walk up to it to scan, is it a Canon or a Toshiba? I don't know. But let's go walk over there and take a look at it real quick then. He walks, I can hear the door slamming, and it's a Toshiba. Well, great. Now step one, we know which one it is now.
Yay. I had a client saying, there's a brother printer somewhere in this office. Where is it? And I look on my notes and I'm like, okay, it's attached to this computer. Okay, so we want to modify that. You know, it's the case of what you're telling me versus what you really want. Like, you know, so, okay, so we finally figured out, okay, it's attached to this computer because it's not a network printer, and it's networked via a shared on the domain. So we go through all this stuff, and I said, okay, it's here. And she says, well, where is it? And so I actually write down, it's in the treatment room by the dog kennels. Knowing what kind of response I'm going to get from her, I hit send, and she says, I know where it is physically. Where is it on the network? How come I can't see it? And I'm like, oh, we didn't ask that. So then I just modify the group policy and pushes out the printer and everybody's good. But, you know.
I like when they say, I can't find my printer. It's on your desk.
I know, it's right.
Find it.
Look. Move your head 3 inches to the right.
There needs to be a line on our invoices called translation. We have a translation fee. That way, when they complain about how high the bill is because we spent, 45 minutes with them to solve a 5-minute problem, well, yeah, the fix was 5 minutes, but the other 40 was translation.
Yeah, you're not speaking English. You're speaking weird 3-year-old computer terms, like you're a 3-year-old. Yeah, my clients know I'm kind of a smart aleck sometimes. When I tell them stuff like, well, isn't it on your desk? They laugh.
Right. Well, yeah, the only reason I did that is because I know that she would laugh. But I could see it was getting to the point in the conversation after like 6 or 7 emails back. I'm like, okay, this is my one little jab and that's it. I'm not going to stoke the fire anymore because I know it could go really bad.
So I also had a client call me today and tell me that, how did the phone call start? First, they were hesitant. We have a problem. Okay. I'm sure you do, or you wouldn't be calling. What's going on? Well, we had some people redoing our floors in the offices, and they were doing the server room, and they moved the server and they put it on a shelf. Now this is a big tower HP ProLiant server. It's kind of heavy. I'm not sure what kind of shelf this was.
Those are super heavy.
Yeah, it's a super shelf. So they put it on a shelf, and it's been running fine for a couple of days. But today, they went to move it. They move it again, and now it just comes up with hardware error. I'm like, okay, first of all, why are the floor people moving the server? We don't want floor people handling the server. I said, was it shut down and then moved? She goes, no, it was on. Okay, so we got some floor guys manhandling your server while it's on and just moving it however they want. Is that what I'm hearing? I guess. She goes, well, our boss didn't want us to be down while we were redoing the floors. What should we have done? I said, you should have called me saying, we're going to be redoing the floors in the server room. What do we need to do? And then I would have told you we could shut the server down, move it to another office, turn it on, do the floors. When it's done, shut the server down, move it back to the server room, and life is good. I said, now you may have... I don't know what, maybe they knocked it over, maybe they dropped it, maybe they turned it upside down while it was running. I don't know what they did. So we're going to have to go out there and take a look at it. And of course, I was scared to the death, and I meant to, because they shouldn't have done that. I mean, I don't go move a server and redo the floors while I'm there. I'm not a floor guy, I do what I do. They shouldn't let that just amazes me that they let the people who do your floors mess with your server. In the end, luckily, it came back up. Without any problems. Well, it took a while to come up. When it came up, we tested everything. The hard drives are all healthy. Everything looked good, and it worked fine. So they dodged a bullet on that one.
Yeah, they did.
But I scared her. I gave her a good scare, and they were down for 2 or 3 hours by the time we got out there. So in the end, they had their downtime anyway, and they got a bill. They're going to get a bill from us. And a nice scare.
Lovely, lovely.
So I had something this week, and this is just actually yesterday. How much do you push back on your clients? And I guess what I mean by that is, so here's what happened. So I had a client who I received an email from a gentleman the day before Thanksgiving, and he said, I need to have remote access to the owner's computer at this site. Now this is a new move. So he had, apparently he had originally a remote access to the owner's computer, but I did not know that. I don't know who this person is. I've never heard of him. The owner left, and I hear from him, I need remote access to the owner's computer on site. And I said, well, I'm out in the field. I'll be back to my office in about an hour, hour and a half. And he goes, well, I'm in Dallas. I'm leaving in 15 minutes. Just set me, just get it working. I'm like, okay. So I email the owner that afternoon, and I said, don't know who this person is. Just wanted to check in. Well, how should I proceed? I it's not my policy to let somebody that I've never heard of know of without owner's permission to allow access into the owner's computer. Just my policy. So I don't hear back from them. Thanksgiving goes by. Day after Thanksgiving goes by. The weekend goes by. Nothing. And then Monday morning, he responds back to me and says, just want to check on the status of this. Well, luckily I get a call that I need to run out to on site anyways. So I'm on site. One of the owners is there, and I talk with him. And he says, oh, yes, that's what this person does. They need access. Not a problem. I call the gentleman in Dallas. I get him all set up. He's got remote access through whatever he uses, GoToAssist or something. And he's good to go, gets in there, is able to access the data he needs. Come to find out, he actually works with the database and cleans things up and does some promotional stuff. But he does it for, like, the whole franchise, not just this one company. But I don't know him from, you know, the guy down the street. So later that day, so the problem is resolved. And I talked to him. I talked to the owner, and I kind of explained why I didn't just instantly let him access. The owner says, no, he understands. Everything's good. I called the gentleman for remote access. I let him know what my thoughts were, why I didn't just let him in because I didn't know him. And he says, no, I completely understand. Everybody's good. Everybody's good. I leave. Hours later, I get a call from the owner's wife, who they're kind of their co-owners. So they both own the shop. And she says in her email that basically it's disappointing and frustrating that this has taken so long to do this, and wants to know, you know, why, essentially. What, you know, why did this take so long to resolve the issue? Now, she's been included in every email thread that I've had. And I wrote her back saying, I didn't know who he was and blah, blah, blah. But then I also wrote in there and I said, you know, I emailed you at 3:40. This would have been, what's today? The 30th. This would have been the 28th. I emailed her on the 23rd at 3:40 p.m. asking her to contact me or to give me more information because I didn't want to just let this person in. So, I mean, along with some other stuff in that email. But have you guys had to take that stance, or do you ever take that stance of, not necessarily the customer is always right, but, you know, I felt like I really had to just put my foot down and say, you know, I realize you're frustrated that this has taken so long, but I did email you and asked you, and you have not responded at all in 5 days. And so now we're at the situation of that it's been resolved, but you can't get mad at me when you never responded back to my emails.
Right. I would have told her the same thing. I would have said, it took so long to resolve because you didn't authorize me to do this work. And I would probably said, in the future, if you want to blanket authorize now any request from anyone to access the owner's computer, let me know now. And anyone who calls, I'll grant them access. If you don't want to do that, you'll need to respond back and approve the requests as they come in. I would have said something like that.
Okay.
Because obviously she's not going to say, well, don't approve. We don't want just anybody connecting. Well, then that's why you have to respond back to the email to authorize it.
Yeah. It was one of those emails where I hit sent and I felt a little bad for being, I didn't want to be too interface about it, but I also wanted to point out that I didn't just sit on this. I asked for permission and they didn't respond.
You could
back.
Say, well, once I got authorization, it was resolved in whatever time frame it was resolved in. But I definitely would have said something about, if you just want to approve now, anyone in the future access and let me know and I'll do it right away next time without waiting for your approval.
Yeah, it'd
probably nicer than I would have been.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have a client that happens all the time where people will come and say that the owner told me to have you do this. And my response is, the owner needs to call me and tell me. Because there's been too many times where people will use that to try to throw their weight around and get you to do something that they know the owner really doesn't want them to do. But at this particular place, everybody's afraid that the owner will yell if it doesn't get done. So they always say, oh, well, he said do this, so just get it done before he finds out it's not done. And I've just had to take the stance that, you know, the owner's yelled at me too many times for doing stuff that somebody else said do, and then he comes back and says, well, I never said that. So unless you hear it from me, don't do it. So that's the stance I take.
Yeah, that's easy. You could tell him, nope, he gave me directions not to take these work orders from anyone but him.
Right.
In fact, I might even say, you know what, send me an email and carbon copy the boss. That way he can see the request as well. And if they don't want to do it, then they know that they probably didn't get approval.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that she's frustrated. This move, this is the move that caught on fire. This is the move that the power supply blew up. Oh. This is, you know, there's been, so the power supply issue, I found the right power supply, got it installed, took it back out there to get their CNC router up and running. Come to find out the CNC router runs on 110 and the only thing in the wall is a 220. So they had to wait for the electrician to come out and redo the wiring anyways.
And to wait for that one, he might have something catch on fire again when you plug
it. And then when he came out, he said that the line was pushing out too much juice anyways. It wasn't even pushing out. So that would explain why maybe the power supply blew up on that computer. So it's been a big mess. And so I understand her frustration, but I also wanted to make sure that I wasn't walked on in this situation and that I do communicate a lot with this company and they don't communicate very much back. And that's a little frustrating for me.
Yeah. Did you, I would ask for, why did it take you so long to respond to the email? Well,
I'm also trying not to burn my bridges.
Well, she's asking you why you took so long. You could ask her why she took so long.
Yeah, I guess I could have.
I don't, when they get like that with me, I kind of let them have it because I don't want, and that puts them in their place. Those really frustrate me because I try and do work as quick as possible, but you can't just do work and then because if it was wrong, they'd be all over you. Why are you giving this person access? Right. With that kind of person, you can't win unless you, personally, I'm not as nice to them.
Well, this may be a company that I
would have probably said it would have been done much quicker had you responded earlier.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, I was just checking to see if that was a little out of line as, you know, business owner to business owner.
No, you were in line.
You've got to cover your bases there. So, yeah, always, I mean, like Matt said, you cover your bases in the beginning, and if they want a blanket approval down the road, you know,
they get the email that approval.
Yeah, put it in writing.
Yeah. Well, I have not heard back from her after writing that email. So I'm on another issue, yes, but not that issue. Like that, she never responded back to that email.
Yeah, so then they know they're running wrong. And maybe she was having a bad day. And I'm going to have that IT guy taking so long.
So speaking of taking so long, one more story. So I have a office where there's a full-time tech on site. And this client has multiple offices. And the issue started because a user in another office, one of the branch offices, was having issues every morning. He would get an error on his computer of a smart hard disk error. And the tech would tell them, just hit enter to continue, and I'll get down there and take care of it. So a few days go by, and the error's getting worse. Computer's freezing, stuff isn't working, shuts down, restarts, and every time he restarts, smart hard disk error. Now, they're sending in pictures because they take a picture of the screen with their phone and send it in, and it's the big blue screen that says the smart hard disk check has detected an imminent failure. To ensure no data loss, please back up the content immediately and run the hard disk test in system diagnostics. Blah, 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 F2, enter, continue, whatever. So after day 4, the tech was supposed to go down there. Something happened, didn't make it down. The end user's now screaming. Actually, I shouldn't say that. This is a law office. This was a secretary. The attorney of the secretary is screaming because their secretary obviously can't get work done. And the tech says, well, why not just leave the computer on and I'll remote in and check it out? So my question is, any of you guys ever remotely solve a smart hard disk error?
No, he's telling that to pacify him for the thing of I'm on it. He's looking at it. He wants him to pacify. Right. Pacify it.
So I knew that, and it was just ridiculous. And so finally, the request gets to me, and I see the error, and I have to tell them, look, I'm going to be down there. I've got a hard drive repair kit with me. Let me go down there and take a look at it because obviously this is not something that can be fixed remotely. So I go down there. I've got my duplicator. It takes me 15 minutes to clone the drive. Problem solved. And it was just one of those things where the guy, you know, basically responded by saying, oh, you have a mobile hard drive repair kit? I said, yes, I do.
It sounds a lot better than it actually is. It's a hard drive and a disk duplicator.
Yep.
You should get a fancy case for it. And like,
oh, I got a nice bag. It's got MB Systems on the side. I walk in with it. It's like a little, big doctor's bag.
I think you should set it up in a hard case and then open it up. And then when you're duplicating, have a red light on it spinning right at the top. Right. So it's like, you know, and then put out some cones or something like, don't, yeah. I'm duplicating a hard drive. Please
keep it down.
Yeah. It's too quiet. It's too loud in here. Respect the duplicating.
I can have some sheets that I put up. I put a little stand, a little, like a doctor's office, you know. Don't stand behind the drapes.
You should. Yeah, that's what you should definitely do. You should add that to your kit.
And then you could charge him for that. Protection services.
I get a little mask, put it over my head.
I'm going to set up a mobile clean room.
That's right. just rolls and rolls of Saran wrap. If anybody has to sneeze, I'm going to ask you to please move, go out of the office.
You can just sit in there, listen to podcasts, and
exactly.
Nobody can see you anyway. Eat your sandwich and
stick a fire extinguisher on the other side of the curtain partition.
It's done in 5 minutes. You should pull out in about 2 hours. Yawning, little bedhead. Oh, that took a lot longer than I expected.
Thinking of having some dry ice to kind of, you know, see underneath the partition. Oh, it's duplicating now.
We're cooking with fire.
Okay.
That'd be nice. That'd be the ultimate mobile hard drive repair unit.
I think we should put a challenge out to there to get some pictures in of the best mobile repair unit you can come up with. Have somebody whip out a portable partition screen with a big red cross on it.
You know,
you need to midway through put out caution slippery signs and just random different signs. Walk out from the tent, put a different sign up. Microwave in use.
Put an LED sign. Have that LED scroll signing. Duplication in process. Do not enter.
Flip on the on air.
Whoa! I just think no matter what you hear from this inside these protective Visqueen sheets, do not come in. Have some sound effects like a goat or something.
People sneak around. Do not come in here.
Keep a little pigeon in your bag. Let the pigeon fly out.
At that point, we have to clear the building. You have an alarm go off. Danger! Well, you
know,
danger!
Matt, you're probably down there in Louisiana. You probably go to some fun voodoo shops or something and start some chicken feathers. Throw some chicken feathers in the air every now and then.
That'd be pretty cool. That'd be a good video. Somebody should do that and video that.
All right. So that will bring us to the email portion of the show. That'll be the next challenge for all of you Podnuts Nation listeners. Send us your best emergency repair toolkit video that we cannot show on an audio podcast.
It'll just be for us.
That would have to make it to the website. If you had an outrageous mobile hard drive repair unit video, that would have to go on the website.
We'll get it up there.
We'll have to allocate some space.
We'll have to get the mobile web space repair kit in play.
Okay, so let's go to the email portion of the show. And with some great news, we'll read an email from Brad Torrey, whose subject line is just simply, Hallelujah. And basically, since we just mentioned that it's past Thanksgiving, which it was past Thanksgiving the last time we had a show, but who's keeping track of the days, right?
I live in the past.
So Brad writes, I found a gift in my podcatcher yesterday. Podnuts Pro was updating and I could listen to your shows. I had been streaming them from my Chrome on my phone. So far I'm up to show 87. I agree, for the most part, free is no go. At the very least, paid managed antivirus is a requirement. Keep up the great shows. It's hard to say who I'm laughing at with more, but I'll be keeping a tally and let you know. So Brad, we will want a count of that tally at some point in the future.
I hope I'm winning. Wait. Yeah, okay. No. We have an email from Alan Miller that says, this is also along the same lines. If you use Pocket Casts for Android and iOS, the subscription or the RSS feed is now up to date, and he says that it now shows up properly in Pocket Casts for Android and iOS. So if you've been missing the show, but you wanted to work on Pocket Cast support for version 6.0.2, it now works.
Yeah, and that's also because Alan emailed Pocket Cast.
Right. Oh, that's right. Yeah, because yeah. Pocket Cast said the show was disabled due to no basically there was not a show for a long time, so they disabled the show.
Yeah, so he emailed them and got it reactivated. That's awesome. Thank you, Alan. You take a small break and they disable you.
Grief. I mean.
Come on.
It could have been worse. ATT could have cut the line.
The ultimate Ross and Rachel moment. We were on a break.
We were on a break for like 3 years. How long was it? 2 years? I don't know.
Two and a half.
Two and a half?
Oh, I forgot. It seems like it was a week. We got an email from Eric Arduini. He says, hey, fellas, it was really great to listen to PNP again. I'm going to assume that means Podnuts Pro. I like learning from your show, even though I turn down potential customers all the time. Martin gets my chuckle because I was writing this email during Matt's joke and didn't hear it. Keep up the good work, brothers. So, thanks, Eric. But we're going to have to discount your vote because you didn't hear all the entries. So
nope. I am currently right now, you can't see it, I'm raising the roof.
That was going to have to be discounted.
That's, or Dane, you don't take that from him.
Sounds like a hanging chad to me.
You have to wait for all the jokes. You can't just write an email while other jokes are
happening.
That's true.
That's right. Yeah, don't be writing notes during the show. We will provide you with whatever note you need at the end of the show.
Stand up for yourself. Don't listen to them. Do your own thing. You be your own man. You chuckle at me if you want to chuckle at me.
So we have quite a bit of email.
We
this,
do.
We
have a nice stack tonight.
So much we won't get to it all tonight, but we have. Which one are we doing next?
Let's do this one. It could be a bit controversial. Could elicit some very good response. But I will read an email from Dante that says, "As an MSP, it's always a good practice to retune." I'm sorry, I still got turkey leg in my throat. to routinely test your client's backup. What is the procedure that your companies take to test backups for clients that are on managed services? And I won't read the rest of his email because we pretty much will touch it all basically in our answers. So who would like to answer first? How do you guys test your backups?
I test them when they call me to say they deleted a file and I have to restore it.
I've had some clients break, and I've restored for that way, so I know it works.
Sound like good answers, gentlemen. I will.
I mean, really, if it's not broke, don't fix it, right?
Right. I think that the only thing I can say differently is that one of the things that I do with my Datto products is I get an email that will give me a snapshot of the servers that we're doing full images of. And those are backups that, you know, it's a full image of the server, and they basically are able to be booted in virtual machines. And so the snapshot just simply shows me that the device will actually take the time to run the backup as if it were booting up in a virtual machine. So it would give me a screenshot of the login screen. And before you ask, could it be just a picture of any logon screen? No, because I have many different servers, and I do get the proper logon screen for each server, each version of Windows. And I even get backups where the boot up hasn't even finished, and it'll be stuck at a starting Windows or whatever. So that knows that I have to lengthen the time to wait for that to actually boot up. But just like you, for the most part, if I can mount an image and grab the files, that's my major test.
Yeah, we use AppAssure for a lot of our backups, and a lot of the other ones we're using the Mob, the managed online backup. So between those two, that probably covers 98% of all of our backup jobs. So, I mean, we know that those backups are reliable. AppAssure also does checks on the backups once they're done to make sure they're readable. And we've been using this stuff for years. I know that it works. I mean, if I had 100 clients with 100 different backup solutions, I'd probably take the approach differently. But with all of them on the same thing, I don't know if there's one day, well, probably there is, at least once a week I'm restoring something for someone using one of those two backup methods, and they work. So we have been taking the backup reports, failed or successful, as our check.
And he does mention that he uses a program called Shadow Protect, which is what I use. Shadow Protect also has a program called Image Ready that will run tests on the backup and then email you. So I get backups, I get completion emails, and then I do get some emails that have some verifications of the backups. So I guess I don't have the time to, like, I don't have an extra server laying around that I can just take the backup and restore to it as a full metal or a bare metal and say, okay, I can guarantee it works because I put that. I don't have the time, and my clients definitely don't have the money to just have a server box sitting around for that. But
well, it's not even just having it sitting around. It's the time that to test it. I mean, how do you really test a backup? Or let's even go further, how do you test a disaster recovery? The only way to do that is to simulate a disaster. So whether it's, you know, pulling the plug on your primary server and seeing if your disaster recovery process actually works. You know, do you have a secondary server that you can spin up and put the backup on and have it take over? Do you have another machine, like you said, laying around? And that's a machine that if it's, you know, if you've got a customer that'll pay to have a spare server, don't you have to fire that server up every so often just to make sure it works and stuff?
Well, so production.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not just that. It's paying for the time to test the backup. And I'll be honest, none of my customers have ever wanted me to, well, they want me to, you know, let them know that the backups are working, but they don't want me to prove it. They don't want to pay for that downtime because.
Well, so he's asking about how do you do it for managed services? So should your backup managed services, be padded enough to spend some time once a month, once a quarter, not necessarily restoring the whole thing, but making sure you can read the backup, maybe restore a few files. If it's something like AppAssure or what you use, we can actually launch the virtual machine and see if the virtual machine launches and you can access it. But
you can do that same thing in Shadow Protect. You can launch it and then pull data out of it if you need to pull data out of it.
Well, then that would probably be, yes. If you're actually doing managed services where you've put together a monthly package, you just add that as part of the deal, whether it's $100 a month or whatever number you need to put on it to where you can purchase. You know, if it's a virtual machine that you're doing, obviously you need to maybe have an external drive that you can copy that virtual machine to and take it someplace else and, you know, spin it up. And maybe that's a, you know, once a month, once a quarter or whatever, you just pop in and do it and send them a report saying, here it is. It's spun up as part of your managed services.
And see, with AppAssure, we can spin it up right on the backup server. If needed, you can actually run a live production, and we've done it before. If the box is big enough, we can spin up the virtual machine. That's what they access. And we've had to do full recoveries using AppAssure, so we know it works. It would be time consuming for us to test hundreds of backups, because we probably have a couple hundred servers that we're backing up. We've become thinking that they're reliable enough that we just trust the backup reports now. And we're restoring all time from them anyway, which is the best test.
All right. So it sounds like we've answered that. And all right.
Wait, and one thing I want to say is, if you're not, for people who are doing, maybe only have one or two clients, they may have the time to go do a test. We're not talking about best practice is to test the backup every so often, but we all know best practices aren't usually done in reality, right? Lots of things are best practices that I don't do. Did I say that out loud?
Well, we heard it out loud, so.
That's the title of the show.
The client asked me, are we testing backups? I said, yeah, we can test backups. We can test you. We perform your backups. We charge you for this much. If you want us to test them, here's a fee for that. And we don't cover that in the in our managed service backup price to do full tests. But
so you don't cover that? You know, because I do have in most of my contracts where we've got, like I said, I mean, I use the Datto, and the Datto has the daily email after a backup with the snapshot. So basically that's what I send to my customer. And basically that's my proof that the backup ran. I can even send them a report for the ones that don't want it every day, that they have a weekly summary that tells them how many backups ran or how many were scheduled, how many were successful screenshots, tells them how much data was backed up. So for those customers, that's part of my backup charge, is for them to get those reports, obviously for me to look at them. Basically, you know, I just each night, you know, I've got a time period where I know all the backup emails are coming in, and I just have to basically go through and make sure that they all say success, and if there's one that says fail, I've got to act on it, and that's part of what that fee is every month. Is
yeah, and that's what we do as well, same thing. Now, what we do is a little differently because we put a check in Logic Now for the backups. So if the backup fails, we'll get an alert in Logic Now that whatever they're using for backup, if it's management only backup, if it's AppAssure, if it's backup exec, we can put a check in Logic Now, and that's what monitors the backup. We get the backup reports, but we'll also get an alert if the backup fails or didn't run, because the check will say, I don't have any successful backups in 24 hours. I'm going to alert. So we'll get those as well. But as far as mounting the backups and checking the backups, just for the sake of checking the backups, I can't really say we do that on any real schedule.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, there may be some people that do. So any of you out there in Podnuts Nation want to comment on that? You know, like you said, Matt, you've got, you know, hundreds of servers. I mean, I'm not as big. I've got about 40, and there's no way I'm going to keep up with that. Even when I had full-time techs, that wasn't something that I had them do all the time. We had the emails, we had the images, and, you know, if we got a failure, that's when we acted. But I will say this, part of the practice is you've got to make sure you're getting those emails, because how many times have we heard stories of, you know, people that didn't realize that they weren't getting a backup report for, what, weeks or months until something happened. It was, oh, weren't you getting the emails? No, I thought you were.
Yep. And that's one reason why we do the alerting inside Logic Now, because if no backup is run, it'll alert, saying, I don't have any successful backups in 24 hours or whatever. So that's a separate thing. Aside from the emails that go up to the backup server itself, Logic Now will alert if it doesn't detect a backup. So
Logic Now is compatible with all the backups. So you said backup exec, the mob.
Oh yeah, you could put a check in there for all kind of backup and systems.
The Shadow Protect as well?
I'm sure. Let me see. I will access one right now, live, on the air, in 2 weeks when you hear it.
Oh, here we go. Podnuts Pro, unscripted.
I mean, the backup list is pretty long. Well, that's the completely wrong thing I just went to. Backup check. All right, let's see what we got here. Oh my God, I can't read all this. Acronis, all the AppAssure, Backup Assist, BrightStore stuff, CA ArcServe stuff, Intronis Cloud Backup, Microsoft Backup, Managed Online Backup, Mozy, Retrospect, StorageCraft, Symantec products, Veritas, Yosemite products, Vault Logics, Veeam. There's all kind of stuff you could put a check for.
All right.
So if you use Logic Now, you can put a backup check in there.
Very nice.
Okay. All right. So, Dante, I hope we've answered your question pretty much. And, again, anybody else in Podnuts Nation have anything to add to that, be sure to email and vote for M1 as the person you giggled at the most this week.
Ardini, you've already casted your vote, so you don't need to do it again. You're good.
That vote's invalid.
Right, that was invalidated.
And this is not American Idol where you can vote as many times as you want.
You can dial into 1-800-GEEKSTERS and vote. Press number one.
Now, we also have, we're not going to go over them tonight, but I know Jason sent in an email, and Dante sent in another email. We'll have to get to those in other shows, but just, if y'all are listening, just know we got them, and we will go over those.
Right.
Just not today.
I do like that we're getting emails, though. And they're good emails. They're thought-provoking emails.
They are good emails. Is there a bad email? Do we have an example of one of those that we can share?
We don't get bad emails. Our listeners like us.
Well, you can't, you know, with somebody who puts hallelujah as the subject, you can't call that a bad email.
No.
When I first saw that, I just saw a subject. I thought, what am I getting, spam mail? And then I read it. I was like, oh, okay, it's a real email. Because I check in Outlook for iOS, and I have like 6 accounts. So when it pops up, I don't really know which account it's going into unless I go into it. So I don't know what email account I was getting that said hallelujah. But it's good. Very good. And about the backup tips, the backup check. I know some people say they check on the schedule, but don't really. You know, if you say you do, but you don't, let us know that too. Let's be honest with everybody. Let's be honest.
We're a backup monitor.
Do you really restore files, run the backup, run the restore every month? That's what I want to know. And how many servers are you managing?
All right.
Can you email that to, or any other questions or comments, podnutspro@podnuts.com.
Okay, so we thank you all for a great show, and we will do our customary ending as per usual. But before our quote, any last words? We'll start from left to right. Mr. Obando.
I got nothing. I was trying to think of something, and I got it. No. I guess I can. I just want to give another shout out to Ardini for voting for me. That
still does not validate his vote.
Hey, Ardini, if you're listening, I'm going to catch you on Boxer, Ardini. I'll make sure that your vote's been validated.
Like that wristband from last night.
Did I miss something?
So, Matt Rainey, any last words before we sign off?
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Okay, so
it's timely. Yes. Trust me, it's timely.
Yes, it is.
Trying to figure out if I'm going to change my last words or not, but I think I'm going to stick with my original ones. All right, what does Ben Franklin have to say?
So Ben Franklin tonight has to say that lost time is never found again.
That is so apropos.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for listening to episode number 89 of Podnuts Pro. Thank you for listening and subscribing, and we shall see you soon.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.